call you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, this is the automatically deleted husband, and I got kind of distracted today because I'm literally under attack. My Kozlowska.org server for at least several hours until I noticed it was under attack, and I did a couple things in order to mitigate it. Because as I'm looking now, about every roughly every 10 seconds, there was an attempt to break in, not just simply, you know, but actually break in. And when I first looked at it, it was interesting to me because it's coming from all over the place, all over the world. And so the first place I looked at was coming from Russia. Next place was coming from Texas. Next place was North Carolina, Durham in particular and whatnot. So it's bouncing all over the place. My guess is it's a zombie farm. Zombie farm is where hackers will go and get control of your computer. And they don't do anything malicious. They simply use your computer as a gateway. And you can buy these zombies for, you know, like 1,000 at a time. So there's quite the market for that. So this allows me as an attacker or whatnot, I can hide myself by going via other people's machines. That's what's probably happening. Question is it targeted or is it random? That I don't know. But the sheer fact that it was, you know, because you get these things periodically, but suddenly I was getting, you know, right now it's like I say, roughly every, you know, I'm seeing it happen right now, roughly every 10 seconds it continues to happen, but I block it immediately. A few hours ago, it was every second or two. Going a little bit further, but still they couldn't get in. So I've just mitigated this. And I don't know why it's happening. Again, my guess is random because obviously these things are searched for. There is the possibility it's not, but I don't know. But either way, it took some time. The other sites, you know, I did start to check one of my other sites. When I look at it, in the last 3 hours, one attack versus last 2 hours, whatever it is, it's only been one attack. Whereas I'm getting on Kozlowska.org, like I say, roughly every 10 seconds. So I don't know if it's targeted or not, but with distraction. But one of the things I did today is I'll leave you a link. One of the gentlemen that I find rather fascinating because. For a variety of reasons, one because of where he's at, in Syria, or he's a Armenian who grew up in Syria, born in Syria, I think, now lives in Germany, and he does a very interesting program, has often some interesting guests, not the things you'd get normally domestically, I see clips of this guy, but I don't know anything about him. Tucker Carlson, and apparently he was canned or whatever. But he did something. He was making a point about, because he's one of the many people who talk about how the major media is used to control and gives lots of examples. And he gave this as an example, and it was kind of like ho-hum. But what I caught was, because he gave a clip from apparently a long interview, and I haven't watched the long interview that he gave, that he said some things that probably made him very much disfavored. I made note of it. At the 4:55 mark of the Syriana analysis program. When someone makes a claim, there's only one question that's important at the very beginning. Is the claim true or not? Because then he goes on to talk about what normally happens to the attack the person. And I thought, well, you know, that's interesting because that's exactly, you know, and that's the issue. It's, okay, I don't like what you say. You're challenging me on something. I'm going to attack you. This is the ad hominem attack. You know, I've mentioned that in reference to a Mr. Cross more than once. And of course, you know, you either attack the person directly, you attack his character, whatnot, or you ignore him. But you don't take on the issue. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, normally you don't hear that kind of stuff, it seems, in the broader audience that apparently Tucker Carlson would have. But, you know, so obviously on the Syriana analysis, yeah, they go very much into that a lot. But what I thought about, and this is why I'll link you to the voicemail I did with Erica Lee earlier in the month, because during that time, there was a, you know, I talked to her, talked about the... her interaction with Tim Mills, the harmonic atheist. There was a number of things that were discussed, and I actually added a link to that because there was a comment made about the vestigial organs. And since that time that I made about that, when, you know, in order to refute the idea of evolution, I made the comment, and then a few weeks later, Genesis Apologetics did their thing about are there signs of evolution in our body, and where they say nope, no, I'm sorry, the evidence of vestigial organs simply isn't there, because everyone that was originally considered that has been shown to be necessary. But so I added that link to that page, but you know. The issue with, you know, one of the things I described at that point with the harmonic atheist is this idea of, you know, unlike the attack of the person, the ad hominem attack that was mentioned by Tucker Carlson with, is what Tim Mills did in the one example I used, and there were many of these. He would speak the truth, but lead you to a wrong conclusion from that evidence, you know, because the example I used is where he said that the Bible is 4th century. And I pointed out where in context, that's true, because John 8 apparently is 4th century, because there's no indication that was ever existed before that time. So, and that's why it's not let's say a lot of circles, it's not considered part of the Bible. But what you do then is you take something that was added in and say, well, then the whole Bible is 4th century, which is not true. So you spoke the truth in the context of, yes, there's a part of the Bible that we normally have that's 4th century, the John 8. But the issue is it's not a valid part of the Bible. So you kind of spoke the truth, but you deceived with it. So I find that, you know, these are the things that I think I want, you know, because it's the comment I made in my letter to the state. I want to teach my kids. It's not just theology. You need to be this and everything else doesn't matter. No, you know, talk about theology, science, world events and things of the nature, and to be able to engage in them. Wisely and gracefully, or something of that nature, because there's the deceivers. There's a whole bunch of them. I think they're even mentioned in the Bible, aren't they? and so, you know, I saw a few of these things, and you see, well, these are the things I want to get across to my kids so they can see, oh, I see where this person's deceiving me. And again, we got to be careful. When somebody says, you know, they make a statement, it may be a true statement or a false statement, and the response is to attack that person, it may be the person who's responding is either naive, out of place, frustrated, whatever. So it may not necessarily be that the person's making the ad hominem attack. That's necessarily, you know, his nature or whatnot. He's out of his field or whatnot. So we don't necessarily condemn everybody because they do an ad hominem attack. But, and I think that's why when you engage somebody, you need to engage with the truth, but offer grace. Because it goes back to the Philonikos idea, to triumph over a friend. That we have no such practice, as we see in Corinthians, I guess. That's not what we do. We do not try to destroy the other person. But we do try to engage them lovingly with the truth. But anyway, I want to teach my kids these things. And, you know, there's a real concern in my mind that, especially because of what's happened in the last week or so, that might transpire. You know, I thought about George. George specifically wrote, "I wish we were family again." And, you know, he's in his well into his 20s now. And he should have the freedom to be able to come visit his dad. You should definitely have the freedom to be able to talk with him. And if he talks with his dad, then he talks with his brothers and sisters, what is that going to do? It really concerns me. It really concerns me. It concerns me for them. And then, of course, I'm concerned for me. Because I'm not sure how I'm going to react. It will be very emotionally trying. But one last thing. Chris and I were planning on, and we finally did, got into it a little bit. He got distracted with a phone call. You know, sometimes people actually work and have to be at a particular place at a particular time. Do people actually live that way? You know, there's actually an advantage to that, to say, well, I work 9 to 5, so I don't have to do anything, you know, work-wise until 9, and when 5 comes, I can stop. With me, it's kind of like, I'm just, well, you know, like Jesus says, I'm always working. It's kind of like, oh. But anyway, couple things out of Jeremiah 7 that I just, there are several, but just a couple. There's a whole bunch. One is 7:11. Has this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your eyes? Behold, I have myself have seen it, declares the Lord. And one of the things I found interesting about that is obviously it's quoted, I think it was at least 3 times. For example, in Luke 19, and he entered the temple and began to drive out those who sold, saying to them, it is written, my house shall be a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers. And, you know, so he's quoting the Jeremiah 7. And, you know, it's interesting to me because, yes, we can see the house of prayer and the den of robbers. Well, the house of prayer is elsewhere, but the den of robbers, we see that. And say, okay, we see the quote. But there's one other thing that I found fascinating, because in Jeremiah 7, behold, I myself have seen it. And then Luke 19:45, and he entered the temple and began to drive out those who sold. When he entered the temple, you know, he physically walked into the temple. And when he was doing that, it wasn't guessing. He could see what he was doing. He saw what was before him. Jesus Christ, our God, in the flesh. And then we have Jeremiah, I myself have seen it. I find that fascinating. Because I think obviously he sees it, you know, because he sees the world. But he also sees it in the sense of physically being there in the case of Luke. Luke, Mark, Matthew, and so forth. Anyway, I found that fascinating. But one of the other things, because it's something I studied in the past. I read through, made some study in Jeremiah 44, but Jeremiah 7:18, the children gather wood, the fathers kindle fire, and the women knead dough to make cakes for the queen of heaven, and they pour out drink offerings to other gods and provoke me to anger. It's kind of like, you shouldn't do this. Well, Jeremiah has some issues and he speaks the truth and people say, oh, well, let's say unpleasant things about you and end up going to Egypt You know, lots of stuff around that. And people are saying, oh, well, and he says, you know, Egypt's going to have a hard time too now, but he's there with them. And he says a bunch of things to them, but Jeremiah 44:16, as for the word of the Lord that you have spoken to us in the name of the Lord, we will not listen to you. So they just said, write them off. No, I'm sorry. You're speaking what the Lord says. We're not going to listen. Isn't that normal? Has anything changed? But then he goes on. But we will do everything that we have vowed to make offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pour out drinking offerings to her as we did, both we and our fathers and our kings and our officials in the cities of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem. For then we had plenty of food and prospered and saw no disaster. But since we left off making offerings to the Queen of Heaven and pouring out drink offerings to her, we have lacked everything and have been consumed by the sword and by famine. And the woman said, we have made offerings to the Queen of Heaven and poured out drink offerings to her. Was it without our husband's approval that we made cakes for her, bearing her image and pouring out drink offerings to her? So, you know, he mentions it in Jeremiah 7, and then in 44, you see it happening. But, you know, one thing is, and the woman said, when we made the offerings, was it without our husband's approval? You know, especially when you consider the context of, you know, the husband is supposed to be the protector of his wife. And if the husband says, hey, let's do this, he's failing on that job, isn't he? But, you know, the idea that when we had plenty of food and prospered and saw no disaster when we did these things. So I would suggest this happens, this repeats over and over and over again. We see it in the Old Testament, we see it in the New Testament, we see it throughout history since then, where things go well because we think we're doing the right thing, and then a collapse comes. And, you know, it's actually pleasant to live in the times when things are going well, but then when you get to that generation where things start to collapse or things are collapsing, it's less than comfortable. I suggest we're either on the way or in Egypt, roughly equivalent right now, because things are collapsing. And, you know, the stage is set for dramatic collapse. So this concerns me. And of course, you know, since I'm 67, most of my life is behind me. But for my kids, most of the life is ahead of them. And this really concerns me. Again, I want to open their eyes so they can engage wisely and with grace. But, you know, then we had plenty of food and prospered and saw no disaster. We've seen a reasonable amount of that domestically for a long time. And I really think disaster is coming. How? I don't know. But is it because of wars? It's the Russians. It's the Chinese. It's, you know, the Iraqis. It's the Taliban, whatnot. No, I don't think so. Is it the economy? The economy is collapsing, whatnot. No, I don't think so. Is it because our obedience to Christ, specifically seen with porneia, the violation of marriage, you know, the marriage between a man and a woman? And again, I will make that case from the Bible. Marriage begins with sex and ends with death. But no. Since Ronald Reagan put the no-fault divorce decree in, it spread across the states, and that is policy, right? Because the state defines marriage, right? Not for the follower of Christ. It never was. The Lord and the Lord alone. Again, as I've pointed out, up to about the 1500s, it was well understood marriage is a family thing. There's no church involvement, maybe a ceremony and things of that nature, a celebration, institutional church. There's no state involvement. It is something the family does. That's why you see arrangements being made. with the Council of Trent, chapter 24, you can check it, and the Book of Common Prayer, we see the institutional church take over marriage. And from that point on, it became the norm. It was a religious ceremony that made you married. And then, of course, as I've pointed out, similar things happen other places, but domestically, we had the American Universal Marriage and Marriage Licensing Act in the 1910s through 20s that brought a common licensing technique across the U.S. And now that the state has the licensing technique offered, you know, you give it, you need that because you have that perk that you don't have to pay as much federal income taxes that you didn't have to pay at all, you know, a decade before because that didn't exist. But you have that mechanics in place. And then as time goes on, the licensing became basically they are the authority. And if they're the authority, they can change the definition. And the definition, well, first we have the divorce thing, which again, the apoluo to literally to send away or dismiss has nothing to do with a state decreed divorce. That I mean, it's apples and oranges. No, it's apples and Volkswagens. You know, completely different. there's no relationship, but it's in the mind, in the culture that there is. And then, of course, well, if the state is defining marriage, the Supreme Court can say, yes, two men can get married, which happened a while ago. And now, of course, well, why can't you marry a frog or a house or a house? Why don't you marry your house? Again, that's happening in Japan. People are marrying things. And of course, obviously, the threesome, the foursome, and whatnot. Why not? And, you know, so if the state defines it, and then, of course, since we've lost that, we lose it now on, oh, you think you're a man? And you grew up? Or you're a young child and you're biologically female, but you think you're a man. We can take care of that for you. And as I point out, there's good money in this. Those are the issues, not the wars, not the economy. Those are the issues I think will cause the Lord to say enough, and we'll see. Whatever version the Lord has, somewhat like what Jeremiah saw happen before him, or the Sodom and Gomorrah thing, or something of that nature. And my big concern is I want to prepare my kids. I want to prepare my kids. You know, I made the, even described it in a video once, the Kaiser Kurios video, which, you know, again, was censored by YouTube as hate speech, because people would say, you know, the story, my understanding of the story at the time, you know, first century, second century, and so forth, Rome would say, when you're approached and challenged, you must say, Kaiser Kurios, Caesar is Lord. And if you do not agree with that, you are executed. Which is kind of like, all right, am I willing to have my life end, more than likely, by being crucified? because I won't say Caesar is Lord. Apparently a whole lot of people did. Because no, Jesus is Lord. How many people would do that domestically today? You know, I do wonder if the number back then may have been percentage-wise like the number of the domestically in the U.S. But, you know, the other thing I find, especially in my study of, you know, torture, the normal thing that people study, it's one thing to torture somebody by doing something extremely cruel, extremely painful. It's another thing to torture somebody by doing something slowly that may take time. You know, the one of the things that's been described, and I just can't imagine, because I forget when it was, 90s, I think, we had a military plane, something happened, whatever it was, and it landed in China, and it was not well received by the Chinese at the time, maybe in the 1980s, and the crew was taken in captivity for a short while, but released. But they were given sleep deprivation. And I think it's a vague recollection, but it was, is that, you know, they gave them a place to rest, and then every hour or two, we have one more thing to, you know, we have some more things to ask. We have, you know, more, and you know, so it was kind of a subtle, but what it did is it gave the sleep deprivation, so it was torture. Whereas, you know, as I've described, the Bagram Air Base, because I showed the video of that, how we had a torture facility there. And one of the things they did is the sleep deprivation. But anyway, how will that happen in a large scale? You know, and of course, one of the things I described, so much for short, one of the things I've described, because I really think this, this is the way you can collectively gather and say, all right, these are the people who have an interest in the Bible. You know, obviously the state can't make a judgment. Do you really follow Christ, or are you just part of the club? But they can tell if you're part of the club fairly easily with your cell phone. I've described that, you know, but I mean, this will be really easy because, you know, one person in a group that you meet with has a Bible program on there and uses it during a gathering. You're all tagged. Doesn't matter if you have one or not. But because of the fact you're there, and you're there because you have a cell phone, you're tagged. And if you're a repeat offender, wherever I heard this term before, then that'll probably impact your social credit score. And you'll see the mild torture in some form or another. I think that'll happen first. You know, it's the silencing, the shadow banning, and things of the nature, and isolate you. Somehow you're bad. So we need to make sure you don't have an impact on the rest of the community. And even we need to make sure you don't have a community. Well, the government doesn't need to do that. The institutional church does that fine, don't they? Anyway, so many things. But I'll look here. Let's see. Oh, yes. There's been a whole bunch. Dozens upon dozens during the time, you know, it's continuing to happen because Lasket.org, the server, is under attack. I still have a bug that I have to find because it's going down occasionally, and that's not right. I'll stop. My lady, my wife, as I pointed out, I want to teach my kids about theology, to know our Creator, about current events, so they don't ooh-ah, but oh, be able to look at things wisely and so forth. So they're not, take the example I used. I gave you the example of it's Kevork. What's his last name? Anyway, Syriana Analysis does an excellent program. He not 100% on board with him, but he offers some serious interaction. Tucker Carlson seems to be more of a whatever. I don't know. I've never seen his program. I've seen clips, but I've never seen his program. So I don't know. But I hope if when you engage the world, you can engage at the more serious level, not the fluff. I've seen clips because a lot of times people make fun of this. There's this program called The View or something of that nature. And it's a bunch of women or whatnot talking. And the clips I see is this is really stupid. This is really stupid. But obviously it has a huge audience. Don't be part of that crowd. It's not that everything they say is wrong. They probably say, again, I wouldn't know, but they probably say a lot of things or occasionally say something that has some merit, has some value, and is very informative. But a lot of the stuff I've seen, especially when it's packaged with emotion and you have to get around that emotion and get on our team because we're, emotionally charged. No, use your mind. Use your mind. And again, I, do the thing about science and whatnot. And when it comes to theology, is Jesus who he claims to be? Remember, if he's not, then he's a liar. Don't trust him. Run. He's a fraud. However, if he is who he claims to be, our creator, may I suggest, take him seriously. Take him really seriously. Form a relationship with him. Love him. I want to instill that in my kids. One of the ways you love him is you love your neighbor as yourself. And as we see in 1 John, if you can't love your neighbor, who you can see, how can you love the Lord who you can't see? Don't be a liar. Don't deceive yourself. Don't offer your drink offering to the Queen of Heaven. Celebrate Christ. Form a relationship with him. Strive to hold on to him and never let him go. You can't do it. But he will hold on to you. And that is my hope for my kids, my wife, my lady, my wife. I try to get short. I'm really doing a bad job of that. But I love you. I'm trying to get that point across. My lady, I love you and I want you back.